Show Me the Way, episode 38, the SBA executive. Ladies and gentlemen, in this episode, we talked to Versi Lark, formerly of the Small Business Administration. Really an interesting guy. Electrical engineer who's worked for some major American corporations and has also served time for our country on the staff of the SBA. But it's more than that. He is an author. His book is entitled Make It Rain. Get it online through Amazon. It's going to be worth your read. Versi is also an angel investor and a venture capitalist and is involved with businesses throughout the region. You're going to be inspired by this guy, everything that he's been through, and he's going to share his new surprise on his next venture. Listen in to episode 38 with Versi Lark. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain LLP about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I am your host, Dave Sider. Joining me on today's show is Versi Lark. You're going to enjoy Versi. I got to tell you this right now. Versi, he has had an exciting career. We want to get into that at DST, which is a very known commodity here in the Kansas City area, and as well with the SBA's Region 7 Administrator. Versi, welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Let's start at the very beginning, because I want the folks at home to identify with who you are. Where were you born?
Oh, my. Man, you're going way back in time.
Yes, sir.
I got to pull cobwebs up. No. Seriously, born in Dayton, Ohio, a long, long time ago. Lived in Dayton until I was in my early 20s and ended up leaving. I worked there for a while, and I'll get into my career later. But born in Dayton, Ohio, a long, long time ago. Graduated from Wright State University.
Yes.
In the Horizon League of Dayton, Ohio. I went to Central State University, which is an HBCU first, for about 2 years.
Yep.
Transferred to Wright State and got a degree in engineering. But my family, my friends from my early years, all in Dayton. My entire family pretty much is there now, except for myself and my sister.
Oh, wow. What kind of engineering degree?
Oh, electrical engineering, the best one. What do you think?
Oh, wow. I was going to say, it's either electrical or chemical. It's one of the two. The rest of them
I couldn't hack that chemical stuff.
Well, good for you. That's impressive. Give us kind of a little bit of your favorite childhood memory.
Oh, my. Boy, there are a lot. So I was born in a family of six brothers and one sister. So we had a lot of memories. Let me just be clear here. But probably as a little kid, probably not my favorite childhood memory, but my favorite book was Curious George.
Oh, wow.
My first book that I went to the library and got that book and read that book, and it really embodied me. And it just, and I have it today. And the other book is Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Things You Can Think. And so those are probably my favorite books as a kid. With regard to just general things, I would tell you, grew up in a family of six and we weren't well off. But we all worked together, played together, did everything together. And the neighborhood and the neighbors also helped us all. We were all in the same situation.
Oh, wow. So
my favorite memory is just knowing that, you know, growing up, everybody was pulling for everybody. And, you know, that's the thing I miss in today's world. But that's really what I think the most of when I think about my hometown of Dayton, Ohio.
God love you. That is a great story. I mean, having that kind of a community around you is everything. And you would hope that everyone has it in their life. Okay, so you get out of college with a double E.
Yes.
Where did you go from there?
Well, I went to work. Actually, I was working before that. I was fortunate when I was at Wright State. I worked mostly going through school. I didn't have all the things that everybody else had, so I had to work. Right. And so I worked part-time as a laborer at Monsanto Research Corporation for the Department of Energy. It was my first stint with the government, but through a contracting agency. And so I went to Wright State. Graduated, worked there as an engineer for about 2 years, and I was still at Monsanto, and my career changed. I was sitting outside the data center and always knocking on the door and poking on the door and messing with people there. And after about, you know, not long enough, they asked me if you want a job, and I said, yeah. I had no idea what an IT career was, but it moved me into information technology out of engineering within about 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And so I left Dayton, Ohio, when I left Monsanto, and I went to work at Compaq Computer Corporation. A lot of people won't know that, down in Houston, Texas.
Yeah. That's a blast from the past. Good for
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I was there doing all the crazy stuff from internet being born and all that. And so that's what I did. So I worked there as an engineer for about 2 years. And then about 3 years after that, I worked as an IT systems engineer at Monsanto and then transferred and went to Houston and lived there for about 17 years before coming to Kansas.
Okay. That's good. A little bit of a culture shock going from Dayton to Houston.
A little bit, the temperature. Heat shock. Hurricane shock, yeah. And culture shock, no doubt. Right.
I remember being there a long time ago. It was February. Flew down there, and it was just bitter cold in Kansas City. In Houston, it was about 90.
Oh yeah,
and 110% humidity. I go, I don't know how the people could live here. So
yeah, when you get off the airplane, you feel a wall of heat and humidity. It's like a wall. As soon as they open those doors and you walk off, it takes a little getting used to, but you get used to it. Like everything.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So you come to Kansas City. What brought you to Kansas City?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually at the Compaq, mm-hmm. Compaq was actually acquired by Hewlett Packard. And right. So I was on there for 14 years between Hewlett Packard and Compaq down in Houston. And during those days, we did a lot of mergers, a lot of acquisitions. And the person I worked with, her name is Valerie Parrish Porter, she was my peer on the business side. And so she moved to Kansas and went to work for Sprint. And Sprint was going to spin off their wireline business called Embark. Mm-hmm. And so she contacted me because I had done a lot of work in IT infrastructure, mergers and acquisitions and all that stuff. And she knew that was coming. So she contacted me and offered me the opportunity to move to Kansas. And it took a while before we decided to do it, but we did. And so that's what brought us here. We came to Sprint to be a part of the spinoff, what was called Embark at the time. And that's what brought us here to the Kansas City area, my wife and myself and two kids.
Excellent. And you made a jump to another institution, another business organization. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Great. So when I was at Embark, it was in the cards. I became the mm-hmm. chief information officer at Embark. Valerie moved on and I picked up her role at what was Embark. And then ultimately, Embark was acquired by a company called CenturyTel, a telecommunications company out of Monroe, Louisiana. And I took that opportunity to exit. And I did with the idea that I was going to spend more time with my kids. I had purchased a gas station back in Dayton, Ohio, a BP gas station, a franchise there. I had an online clothing store. So while I was working, I was doing all kinds of entrepreneurial things.
Wow.
And I thought, this is a perfect opportunity for me to exit and really focus on that. And so I did. And then out of the blue, believe it or not, a recruiter that actually found me the opportunity to go to Houston to work for Compaq called me out of the blue. And he said, hey, Versi, I've been paying attention to you. I see what you're doing. I see that you're not employed anymore. I said, well, I'm busy. And he goes,
I'm an entrepreneur.
Exactly. And so he said, I've got an opportunity at DST Systems in downtown Kansas City. And I was familiar with DST because I was a customer. The companies I worked for were customers, were Sprint and all these other companies. So I knew them from a printing perspective. So I went down there out of respect, loyalty, professional courtesy. I said, yeah, I'll talk to anybody, but I'm really not interested. And so I talked to DST Systems, and that's how it came together. I met with Steve Hooley, who was a chief operating officer, Tom McDonald, who was the CEO at the time.
Right.
And after about, I don't know, about probably an hour with Tom McDonald, I went back to talk to Steve, and he says, how in the heck did you talk to Tom for an hour? He didn't talk to anybody that long.
He doesn't talk to anybody that long. Right.
And so from that perspective, I knew that there was just a fit between the three of us. And I knew my goose was cooked. Quite frankly, I said, you know what? I'm going back into the corporate world. So that brought me to DST to work as the chief information, the first one they ever had for the company at that time. And that was now I retired in 2018. I think it was 2010 or so that I joined. So I'd moved from the chemical industry to the high tech industry, telecommunications. And now I was like, you know, something else to learn. And so that intrigued me for sure. And so that's what brought me to DST Systems, with that conversation with both Tom and Steve, and my juices were flowing again. And I just couldn't resist learning. And quite frankly, there was an opportunity to make a difference at DST. They were trying to grow the business, and being in the industries I've come from, I've been through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I wanted to help do that.
And then from there, you launched into something that we want to talk about today. You were able to take your entrepreneurial experience, your Fortune 100 experience, wonderful professional. I'm envious of electrical and chemical engineers. I'll tell you that. I truly am. You take your wonderful professional background and you go where, sir?
Yes. And so I left there and with an idea to start a book. And so I wrote a book, Make It Rain, because I learned while I was at BST, to be blunt, the financial services industry is really not geared toward people with a lot out of any money. And I would sit in these meetings with board members from all these companies that were my customers, and they talk about what they were doing around financial literacy. And I just thought to myself, I said, you know, no one of these guys ever talked to me until they really knew who I was and what I could offer. No one talked to me when I was just a poor person back in Dayton, Ohio, trying to find right. And I right. think something could be done different. Yeah. So I wrote a book to do that. But after I wrote that book, again, the engineer in me just started thinking about there's something behind this, because I'm meeting with people and talking to people in groups, and they're saying, I understand what you're saying. I really appreciate you educating me, but I don't have the money or the income to do that.
Right.
And so I really pulled on the thread and I saw what was happening. I said, we need to invest in jobs that pay well and business growth. And so I became an angel investor, invested. At this point, I've got about 20 companies in my portfolio in the Midwest predominantly. I'm pretty much in the Midwest area. And then from there, I realized once, like always, I started pulling on the thread, what's next? And there's a thing called venture capital. And so I partnered with someone I worked with as a partner at DST. He started his own venture capital firm. And so the last thing we did that was of significance is he's already had the firm. And so we created a fund. It's called the Prosperity Fund. And the gentleman's name is Mike Abai. And so he's the CEO of that company. And it's a $20 million fund. And we've already deployed capital into about 6 businesses across the United States. And so I'm all in about how can we help businesses grow so that actually people's job opportunities can grow, which means their incomes can grow. And if they learn from either Make It Rain or Dave Ramsey or whoever, they now have money to do the things that they need to do to live a better life and retire well. And so that's what I've been working on. And then until such time, I joined the SBA just about a year and a half ago.
So how do you get a prestigious job in the government? I mean, I honestly don't know. Do they just call you up and go, you know, we sent the black helicopters over and figured you're the guy? How does that work?
Wow. You know what? So this is not a political thing or anything like that for me.
Right.
I tried to get in on the Trump administration in this area. And
right.
It was not successful. And that's just the way it goes. You know, they had Mr. McMahon, who actually ran the SBA at the time. And I thought it would have been a great opportunity to join. But I didn't get that opportunity. But I did get the opportunity in the Biden administration. And literally a relationship. Someone called me that was in a leadership position. Leadership development organization that I was in about 15 years ago, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And
says
to me, hey, I see you're doing all this stuff with small businesses and nonprofits and et cetera. There's an opportunity to join the SBA in the as an appointee in the Biden administration. Are you interested? And of course, I said, no. I always say no first. That's my first response. I'm like, I'm done working.
You're smart.
Yeah.
You're smart.
Yeah. And so literally he said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to connect you with someone and they can tell you more about the opportunity. And he did. And they talked to me about it. Similar to the DST scenario, I was like, man, what I'm doing now is not on this scale. I can, number one, learn. And number two, when I leave, I'll have more tools in my tool belt to help build businesses in the Midwest and across the United States. And that's really why it was really, really good to me. I talked to the administrator at the time, Administrator Guzman, on a weekend. And she called me twice and we had a great conversation. And normally there are people that have been in campaigns and direct involved in political activities that get these appointments. And so I'm a different kind of guy, but they took a chance on me and gave me an opportunity and I'm forever thankful for it. Yeah. It wasn't a great plan. That's for sure. Yeah.
What do they say? Life is what happens to you while you're busy making plans.
That's right.
But you've always had plans.
I mean, you've had
an idea of a direction you wanted to go. Let's talk about the SBA loans and the whole system, because what I am finding with a certain range of businesses that are for sale, SBA is, for a lot of people, one-stop shop to achieve their lifelong dream of buying a business. So I don't even know the basics because I've never applied for an SBA loan at this point. So let's start with the beginning. What would you want people to know about being able to borrow money from the SBA?
Yeah.
What, given your background?
Yeah, you bet. And actually, I'm glad you asked that question because it is a bit of a mystery because I'll be blunt. So I tried to apply for an SBA loan when I purchased my gas station back in Dayton, Ohio. And the process was complicated. I just gave up and did it a different route. And because I just didn't have, number one, I didn't have the time to go through the process.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably there's a couple of things that I would share as just pointers. maybe before I do that, let me just maybe tell people what the SBA offers so they get that as a,
thank you.
As a basis.
Thank right, you.
Why don't we start there?
Yep.
And so, when it's specifically around lending. They do a lot of things, but specifically around loans, there's really five things that people should know.
Good.
So the first one is they offer micro loans. And so micro business loans are range from $500 to $50,000. And for most people that are going to start a business, maybe it's a lawn service, or if they're getting started, or if they are have poor credit, or maybe have never gotten a loan before, a business loan, it's a great place to start to get into the, to get your house in order, so to speak, so you get through that process. And so those micro loans are available across the country, across the nation. And I would say the interest rate on those, I had that written out somewhere. I think it's around, yeah, they're around 8 to 13%. This is my press. It may be changed right now with what's been happening in that 8 to 13% range, and they're from up to $500 to $50,000. So you think about people that are running a beauty shop, or they want to have a hair care shop, barbers, those kind of folks.
Yeah.
You know, yep, you don't yep. need a lot of money, yep. lawn care or a painter or plumber right. or electrician. You don't need right. a lot of money. You need a truck. You need some tools and you've already got the wisdom, right? And so it's a great place to go get started in my mind. Or if you have a bad credit situation, a great way to get going. That's what that's for. There's lenders here in the area. I want to make sure I mention that for this particular. AltCap is in the Kansas City area. And then Justin yep. Peterson is in the St. Louis area. They all both serve
yep.
the Midwest area. And so that's a great place for people that are in that early startup stage, maybe. And you don't, they've got maybe to a point where they need some additional capital to just do it, buy some inventory, or just kind of scale up a little bit. Great for that. The next area is what's called, and this is the government name is 7A, the number 7A.
Yep.
And that's a type of loan that goes, again, from roughly 500 all the way up to 5.5 million. So if you are in the business of, you're trying to acquire a business, or you're trying to expand your business, you need to buy a building to run your business in, you need to buy equipment or machinery, that opportunity is there for you. Again, requires a bit more rigor than what you would do for a micro loan, but no different than going to a normal commercial bank. The difference between the two is the SBA is kind of a last course of action for people that can get financed through. Now, you can go there for normal financing if you choose, but if you can get somewhere else, they are the next last place for people to go if they need really, really serious money. And then in addition to that, there's something called a 504. So I've talked about a micro loan, a 7A, and it goes up to $5.5 million. And if you are, and that's for small businesses that are in developing communities, they're offered through what's called CDCs, or community development corporations, that are really focused on mission, trying to rebuild communities, rebuild areas that have been either decimated or fallen behind. And so people that are starting businesses in those areas, that's a great place to go as well. And you can have up to three of those 504 loans outstanding. So that gives you a lot of cash if you're really growing. There's some requirements around that you have to be less than five. Let's see, I'll make sure I get that right. I think it's $5 million net worth, $15 million net worth, and $5 million of revenue flowing in, net revenue flowing in. So if you're small, you can get either one of those three to get started. The last one I'm going to talk about, I think, is even better because it's in my space. There's something called a small business investment company, SBIC. And what they yes. do is they partner with venture capital firms to provide additional capital to those firms so they can invest equity and loans. So the SBA does much more. And I had no idea, to be blunt, when I joined the SBA, all this was available. I'm like, my God, I missed the boat in my career. And so when I get this opportunity like you did, I like to start there to let people know these are available. They're not easy or easy to get. And the reason they're not easy to get, because many people aren't ready. And so they've got to get their business ready. So if you're in business, make sure you're paying your taxes, right? The ideal candidate, you have to pay your taxes, and you got to be up on your taxes before you're going to get a loan from the government. These are federal dollars that we as taxpayers pay for. So you've got to make sure that people are doing the right thing.
Right.
The next one is they can have okay credit. They can have great credit. You can get a loan. If you have bad credit, there are organizations that are tied to the SBA as nonprofits that will help you for free. Let me just say that again, for free. If you don't have wow. your house in order, build your business plan, build your marketing plan, get your finances in order. Again, agree if you're willing to do the work, right? Get your house in order, so to speak, so that you can actually be ready to go apply for a loan and have more odds of succeeding when you apply for that loan. So that's important. And then the next one is, what's your cash flow? On every business loan, it gets down, it ultimately going to get down to, what's the potential for you to pay me back? And so make sure that you have your financials in order, but also watch your cash flow. You can be as profitable as you would like, but if your cash flow isn't flowing well, you can't pay back the loan. Yes. You're not going to get a loan. And people think, I'm profitable, I've been in business for 10 years, and they won't give me a loan. Usually it's because there's a cash flow issue. You can get through the credit issue over time, but the cash flow issue, you've got to fix before you're going to get a loan, whether it's a microloan or a 7(a) loan, a 504 loan, or et cetera. So ideally, we're finding, SBA's goal is to find people that maybe are not in the best shape, and those nonprofit organizations that we work with out in the community that they actually provide funding to help you get ready, so that when you come to get that loan, you're ready to get it. Odds are you're going to get one if you've gone through the process that they give you.
So most of the time when I've seen it come up, a candidate is going to work with a local banker first.
That's
and
correct.
Then go to the SBA.
That's correct.
Second. And most of the time that I've seen it, there is a limit that the SBA will guarantee. Can you speak to that as far as the loan underwriting?
Yeah. So the limits are the ones I talked about. So it depends on obviously what your needs are, what your ability to repay is. 500 to, depending on the type of loan, if it's a microloan, up to $50,000. When you move to the 7(a) loans, there are specific things for veterans, for people in underserved communities, et cetera. It'll take you from that 50K up to 350K, right? And in that case, that's through a non-bank ad. So there are organizations that are basically SBA micro lenders, and you can look those up. That's not a bank, that's just traditional financing through private lenders. And then and they're nonprofit for the most part. And then you move into the normal 7A and the 504. Those go through banks. The banks are doing that. The SBA guarantees, again, my memory's a little bad, so check the www.sba.gov site to verify, but I believe it's 75%. They guarantee 75 or 85% they guarantee for the banks. So it gives them the ability to loan with less risk, which is why the process works. So if you go through a bank and you ask for an SBA loan and apply for it, they're more prone to give it to you if you have a little bit of hair on your financials, because they know they're going to get 75 or 85% of that money back when the deal's done, if you are not able to pay. But they're going to hold you accountable to pay. Ultimately, you should pay it back because you want to get more money as your business grows.
Excellent. Great ideas. Now, I understand there's some exciting news for you that you could share with us.
Yeah.
In the entrepreneurial spirit, the angel investor spirit, tell us about that, where you're going, what you're doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I've been at it now for about 5 years as an angel investor, and I've been working as a limited partner investing in venture capital for about 3 years. And literally, as I thought about it, I said, there's an opportunity to actually invest in the what people use the underserved community, what that really means, in low to moderate income communities to grow businesses. And there's a lot of people out there with great ideas, where there's tech oriented, et cetera. And so I partnered with this company, as I mentioned, Naples Technology Ventures out of Florida, with the person that I worked with at DST. And so we launched that fund. What I want to do next, again, God willing, I don't know how things, you never know how things are going to turn out, but this is what I hope to do. And that is start a lending company. Because I see an opportunity where, even with the help of the SBA, et cetera, the SBA opened my eyes to the opportunity. The SBA has the charter to have 350 micro lenders that are nonprofit lenders in the United States. They have about 170 at my last count. And so I was thinking about going into that area through a nonprofit first, but then I thought, you know what? I'd have more flexibility to actually work with people if I did it in a for-profit way. And so on the horizon for me is really work with a couple of organizations to come up with the capital and the operations to build a micro lending facility, starting here in the Kansas City, right in the Missouri area, in Kansas and Missouri first. And my goal is to spread that into the Midwest areas that I'm familiar with. And hopefully we'll be able to pull that off here in the next 6 months or so. But that's my goal. If I can't, I'll partner with somebody and do what I've done with the venture capital, that we can bring money together and do it through an existing entity. But I'm hoping I can do it myself with a few partners, so that we have the flexibility, more flexibility, to provide loans to people who really need it. You know, I look at the infrastructure laws that passed. There are a lot of construction firms that simply need a little bit of money to be able to scale up, to get contracts, to do that work on behalf of our communities. And so that's really one of the drivers with my microloan thoughts, is focus on the construction industry first, and then the services area second.
Got it.
And hopefully we'll pull that together here soon. Yeah, I'm excited about it. My wife hadn't told me no yet, so I know I'm on to something good. When she tells me no, then I've been deep yogurt. I have to pull back.
She has the ultimate veto power that she can pull at any time. So, see, what I've learned from you is, even though you've been in world-class organizations, quite candidly, and at a high level in the government, you're an entrepreneur. I mean, really.
Definitely.
And you're able to bring that kind of spirit and ingenuity and enthusiasm. I mean, people listening to you are going to be fired up about,
I hope so,
what you're doing and where you're going.
I want them to get the money they need to start their business. That's for sure. Yep. Yeah.
What is so wonderful is, through all of that, you still have this entrepreneurial investment bent.
Absolutely.
Whatever roads you've gone down in that regard, high energy, a lot of enthusiasm, you see some ways forward to help people. And it goes beyond then being an investor. You are just one of those givers that are out there in society trying to help individuals.
I appreciate that. I think it gets back to my upbringing and my, I call it my penchant for wanting to be an engineer. I always wanted to fix things. And so, well, I can't sit still when I see an opportunity. And if that means partnering with someone to do it, I'll do that. If I have to do it myself, I'll figure out, and then I'll partner with somebody along the way. I just think America was built off entrepreneurship. And the more people we can get in the game, the more opportunities they're going to create for other people once we light the fire. And that's what I hope to do between now and the time I, quite frankly, move on from this earth, and just light the fire in people to take action and take ownership of their lives, their money, and their businesses and their communities. And I think that entrepreneurship is a great way to do that.
This country is great because of people like you, Versi.
Oh, thank you.
That's what you need to hear. It's that kind of enthusiasm. How do people get a hold of you if they want to know more about what you're doing, where you're going?
Yeah. So it's easy for me. And we should have posted some of it, but I'll just give you, I'm like the easiest guy in the world to get a hold of. So first and foremost, if you want to find me anywhere, I'm going to give you my name and spell it. It's V as in Victor, E-R-C-I-E, last name Lark, L-A-R-K. If you Google that name, you will find me. If you don't want to go that way, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else. I never give my phone number out on these things, but I also have a website, and it's versilark.com. And if you go there, you can find me, and you can just click on that and send me a note. So that's the best way to do it. I try not to give my phone number out to everybody because then it just goes off the hook. But use email or find me that way. Google me. You can find me on LinkedIn. I want to make one more point, though.
Please.
The things I talked about with the SBA, I didn't have a clue what they had to offer when I went in. They have a lot more to offer, but they also are working on their processes to improve the speed and delivery of loans and capability. So if you've gone to the SBA before and it didn't work out and you still need capital, give it another try. That would be my. And then the second one is, if it doesn't work that time, keep giving it a try, because ultimately, if you're going to be in business, you're going to have some failure and things aren't going to go the way you want, whether it's a commercial lender, a VC firm, you got to keep trying until you find it. And I've seen people that have gone to 100 places, 60 places, 40 places before they got that yes. And so if you really want to make it as an entrepreneur, you got to keep going until you get that yes. And if you keep trying, you're going to get a yes. So just keep at it. But the SBA is a great resource. And I'm so glad I had the opportunity to spend time there to learn. And like I said, now I spend my time to educate people about what I learned so they can apply it to themselves. And I want to thank you for this opportunity. So I appreciate it.
Hey, I just want to buy some of your energy. I'm serious. You've done quite a bit here in your life. Thanks again to Versi. And I'm glad that you've given them a way to get a hold of you. Really appreciate that. If you want to learn more about the SBA and find local resources in your area to help start, grow, and expand your small businesses, go to www.sba.gov. And folks, if you're in search of assistance or need assistance, go to davesider.com and schedule a consultation. Also, please be sure to subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Versi, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, be safe. This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, business owners should consult with a professional, hopefully an attorney, on their distinct circumstances.